WIOX is supported by the following community underwriters. Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury, now fully open for in-store shopping. Selection of wines listed at roxburywineandspirits.com. Orders accepted by phone or email 607-326-6200 or jeff@roxburywineandspirits.com. Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. Diamond Hollow Books in Andes for secondhand, vintage, and new books focused on literature and the arts, earth wisdom, Emily Dickinson, Dante, Dylan, Asian classics, and mycology. Diamond Hollow also purchases quality used books. Open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 6 by appointment or anytime the front door is open. Diamond Hollow Books on Main Street in Andes. DiamondHollowBooks.com. What the Soap? WTS and Company in Prattsville for soaps and lotions made on site, locally handcrafted candles, pottery, jewelry, art, and gifts, and a hand-picked selection of books on homesteading, nature, and local history. WTS and Company in the Prattsville Plaza and online at whatthesoap.com.
We know the elders, but New Jazz Excursions will focus on the latest generational freeform thinkers and creators making vital America's greatest cultural legacy. So join me, Mike Jakovic, for New Jazz Excursions, alternate Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in the Catskills at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable, Channel 20, streaming at WIOXradio.org and on all your smartphone radio apps.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20 on the campus of SUNY Delhi at 107.5 FM at WIOXradio.org and on your mobile device with any FM radio app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight. But we have Catskill Forest Association's president, Mike Porter, here. Mike, how's it going?
Good.
What have you been up to?
I built some picnic tables for a coffee shop out of stuff I milled, which was kind of neat. I cut a bunch of firewood for a friend today, and then I got a chance to come on here and talk about firewood. So I says, might just well.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Mike.
Yeah, and I've been hauling firewood from my wood stove.
Yeah.
Every day.
Been burning a lot of firewood, but tonight we're going to have a firewood roundtable discussion with Mike, myself, and Tom Linvit. Is it Linvit?
Linvite,
gotcha.
See, last time you got it perfect.
I know.
And that threw me off.
Well, what have you been up to, Tom? You bet you were on, how long ago? Last fall?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was just before November when the CFA did the mushroom inoculation workshop. It was a week before that, so.
Yeah.
Right around then.
Talking about mushroom logs the last time?
Yeah. It's been a busy winter.
Has it?
I'm surprised. Yeah, last winter I spent my whole time working in the shop, building tables and odds and ends. This year I've hardly been in the shop. I had one commission job to finish up, and then, I don't know, it just seems like work, work, work. Running a sawmill, trying to get lumber out with the snow, and it's no fun milling when it's 10 or 15 degrees out, but people need their wood. I took an afternoon off last week, went snowshoeing for the first time in a long time. Went down in the woods and looked for critter tracks and whatnot. Traffic is way down.
Is it?
Yeah. And I got my first order of mushroom logs, so I've been working on that this week. So, busy.
Yeah, it's been cold. Been a cold winter, you know?
Yes.
Been burning a lot of wood myself, bringing wood in the house every couple of days.
Yeah.
I have a cart. And,
how much you bringing at a time?
I don't know. It's one of those Landmen.
Yeah, I got one too.
Yeah.
I actually have three of them.
And I fill it right up. And when it was getting down to negative 8 or 9, not as cold as Margaritaville, like negative 13 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was every two and a half days bringing in wood.
You're a good man. I get 24 hours out of one of mine.
24 hours?
Yeah, but maybe you got the deeper one.
I don't know. Well, we'll talk about this tonight. Yeah. You know, it depends what kind of stove you got, wood you're burning.
There's one in the house and two in the shop.
See, if you weren't burning just ash.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Game on. All right. Yeah. So that's what we're talking about tonight. Everyone burns wood differently. And I remember years ago when I was getting into firewood and still learning a lot, I went to, is it Heat Source? What is that? Woodheat.org. You ever go to their site?
I don't think so.
No.
They haven't changed it much in 15 years, but there's some really good information on there. And I remember this other guy who was much older than me says, I don't need any advice on starting a fire. I'm not going to that website. I said, fair enough. I'm going to look at it. And I learned actually a lot there. But I feel like you can always learn something about even how to start a fire.
Knowledge is power.
Yeah. But I don't know. First of all, I guess ask everyone why they burn wood. Be a good place to start, no?
You guys hit that pretty good last show, you know. All those little esoteric things, the health of the forest, cleaning up all the junk that's around and putting it to good use, the nice dry heat. We were talking about this earlier tonight. There's nothing like standing in front of a wood stove after a cold day outside cutting wood to warm the bones back up, you know.
And I hate burning oil, if I can get away without burning
oil.
Yeah,
well, the cost alone is...
So I have wood. I don't have to buy wood. I think that's really the only way to really make it good, is to not have to buy it. And all those things, you clean the woods, you take down stuff you don't want. Like this year, I'm burning stuff that I cut during the first 8 months of COVID. It was perfect. We were out all winter long cutting wood, and I brought it home and I'm burning it now. It's talk about dry. It's like taking two baseball bats and whacking them together.
Nice.
Get that nice ring.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What kind of trees are you cutting down for firewood, Mike?
Whatever needs to be cut. I actually had John come up one day and we went through the woods and I picked out a bunch that I wanted cut. And there's ash, there's cherry, where it needs to be cut, maple, both sugar and soft maple, a little black birch.
Black birch's nice.
Yeah.
What about size? I mean, when I first got into wood, I was all about the big trees. Now I'm all about the pole-sized trees.
You got to handle those big ones. That's not fun.
Yeah.
That's no fun.
Even with a skidder, it's a bear. Because at some point, you get down to splitting it.
Yeah.
And if you're lifting the rounds up to put them on a splitter,
yeah,
or you're splitting them with a maul, it's still a bear getting that first break and, yeah. and breaking it in half. I'm with you. Those 10 to 16 inch trees are, you know, pretty much a sweet spot. But I'm like Mike, I take whatever I can get.
Yeah.
Except I have a problem between my ears when I get a nice piece of cherry or something like that.
You can't cut it up for fire.
It's so hard to put it in a firewood pile. Absolutely. Even if it's, you know, only 8 inches, I can still get some nice boards out of that for boxes and stuff like that. When that dries up, gets planed out, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to...
I haven't cut any big trees in the last few years. I had a game of logging at the property and had a bunch of big ones cut. And I couldn't lift the blocks. So I have a chainsaw big enough to run my Alaskan mill. And I just score the logs, hand split them into quarters with each block. And then I can lift a quarter. And I put them in a bucket on my tractor. I drive the bucket up to the splitter. This is the new mic. The old mic handled it 10 times. My son used to say, "What are you doing, Dad?" So I take it off the bucket, put it into the splitter, throw it in the truck, bring it home, put it in the woodshed.
Okay.
And that's the new mic. Yeah.
So wait, you split it. You take it. How do you get it out of the wood? You skid it out?
I block it where it is. Right now I've got wood just piled in the woods in rounds.
Okay.
I'll take the tractor in with the bucket, bring it out to the splitter so I don't have to lift anything.
Right. It's all about moving it fewer times.
Yeah.
Yeah, cutting those steps down is because you're always trying to find a little bit easier way to do it or a little bit more efficient or a little bit something, you know, and you like to learn over time. You know, I've been burning for 40 years, so I'm almost halfway there now.
Right.
But holy one year I decided I had the big idea to eliminate that mess from the splitter. I moved the splitter down into the woods, and I brought a trailer down there, and I would just skid the logs up to where the splitter was in the woods, buck and split them there. The garbage stayed in the woods, which is fine. It just rots back down into the soil, and that's, you know, the normal cycle. And throw the split wood right on the trail. When the trailer was full, I'd hook it up to the mule and drag it up to the hill. But, man, I'll tell you what, it's still handling. I found the most efficient way is put the splitter right next to where the pile's going to go. Drag the logs up to the splitter, and then buck and split right there, and from the splitter they go right on the pile.
Yeah.
Miss that extra transportation step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I split by hand, and I got to say, if you're splitting by hand, definitely want to get trees that aren't too big and that are forest grown. Yep. That way they have less branches to, you know, have knots and stuff. Yeah. Because even ash, we were arguing about this over the email, but I find ash terrible if it's open grown for hand splitting.
See, I've never had one.
Yeah.
Ever like that.
I mean, it can be very stringy.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, you cut one down at my neighbor's property that I got.
Yeah, I remember that tree.
That tree was ugly as sin.
Yeah.
It was twisted. And it was twisted, and it had all sorts of strain in it. And when I got that, it split like a bear.
Really?
Yeah.
And exactly.
That was an ugly tree. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, it matters.
Yep.
So I try not to mess around with those trees unless it was from a job and then I'm stuck with a big gnarly tree.
Oh, I get a lot of stuff dropped off by arborists, tree cutters. You know, my son does property maintenance and, you know, he builds and whatnot, but once in a while he's got to clear out some stuff or he'll clean up a yard for somebody and he's got all this dead stuff and he'll say, "Dad, you want it?" "Yeah, it's firewood." Yeah. You know, bring it in, dump it in the yard, and some of that gnarly stuff you get from yard trees is a lot of extra work, but wood is wood. Everything's BTUs,
right? I don't know. I'm trying not to. I mean, sometimes I feel like it's diminishing returns, though, on some sizes, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of labor
involved. Especially if you're hand splitting. You can whack your head off trying to split something.
Yeah.
When I was hand splitting, which up until 10 years ago, I hand split everything also.
Yeah.
And I would, anything I couldn't whack and break in two whacks, I'd put aside. And then my neighbor would come over with his splitter and split it for me. And it was usually an hour or two worth of work, but I used the whole thing. I just had a place to put it, and he didn't mind coming over, and I'd trade him tractor work for his splitter.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, that was Frank. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. So we had a real good working relationship that way, and we still do stuff together like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I definitely have done damage to my right elbow because I didn't learn that right away.
Yeah.
And I have to trade off now because, you know, it's just a tendon that goes to your...
Left-handed some?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have to. I alternate now because the right elbow just got destroyed from being an idiot and pounding wedges over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You know, and just alternating makes all the difference. Yeah. Even when you lift up a log, even if you have a mechanic or a hydraulic splitter, you probably should lift it. You know, like you tend to favor a log when you lift it up, you know, your right elbow down if you're right-handed. Just alternating makes a difference.
Yeah. You know what I found really helps when you're lifting heavy rounds up onto the splitter? A Picarone. 5 years ago, I got my first Picarone. What a difference.
That Paul Poker is another name, I think?
I've never heard that term, but I guess so.
It's a hook on a hole?
It's a hook on a short handle.
Yeah.
Not a pole puck or it's not like a log hook type thing. You know, it looks like a hay hook. It's just a pointed thing. You can go look them up. LogRite makes some good ones with aluminum handles that don't break. I happen to have some wooden handle ones from PV Manufacturing up in Maine, and I think mine's got about an 18-inch handle on it. You whack that in one end, and I am only bending half as far as I used to bend.
So you use that on one end?
I use that on one end and a standard grip on the other end.
Huh.
And then if you get down to something that's liftable, and if the piece is, you know, around your foot, you drive that thing in, you pick the thing up, swing it behind you a little bit, and then use that forward momentum, and it swings right up on that splitter.
Huh.
It literally added probably 2 or 3 hours on how long I could work in a day splitting wood. And it saved me a lot of chiropractor bills.
Yeah, I'll look into that. Picarone, huh?
Huge improvement.
Yeah, yeah, little things. So, splitting, any particular splitter everyone goes after? Or?
Well, when I got my splitter, I figured I waited till I was 62 to get it. I was going to get a good one.
Right. So you earned it?
I earned it, yeah. I actually went and bought a Timberwolf, a basic Timberwolf with a American-made, had the shortest return that I could find without getting one of those centrifugal things where you could lop your arm off.
So what's that? What do you mean?
Yeah, they scare me. A kinetic splitter.
Yeah, the kinetic splitter.
What's wrong with the kinetic splitter?
There's probably nothing wrong with it, but...
Just better have good reflexes.
You got to be quick.
Yeah.
And this had a tray on it, so you could put the block on and not have to hold it once you put it on here. It just settled in the tray. Hmm. And then I since made a table for the other side, so when I split a block, I don't have to go around the other side and pick it up and put it back on the splitter. I have just a table there that it falls on.
Yeah, that's what I'm missing. I got a weld one on mine.
Yeah, mine's just a wooden thing. I just made it out of some of the lumber I made. And it works really good. It saves a whole lot of bending over.
Yeah, I had to pick that. And usually when it's a block that you let fall on the other side, it's a big one.
Yeah.
It's never a small one.
No.
What about chainsaws?
Chainsaws?
Yeah. You know, the things you use to cut the tree?
Oh, those things.
Hell yeah. Which one are you using for that?
I'm using a John Thread 2166.
That's a nice saw.
And I use it for my sawmill.
You've had that a while, no?
Yeah, I have.
It's been doing well.
Yeah. I actually have had a little trouble starting it lately because I have bad shoulders. So I've taken to using a little spritz of magic air.
Yeah, be careful ether. With that.
Yeah, I don't use, I use just a touch, and it lets me start it.
Yeah.
But when I cut today, the friend I was cutting for, he's not feeling well. So I went and cut firewood for him, and he had logs pulled out of his pile, and he says, use my saw because it's dirty. He says, well, let me look at it. I had my saw there. Let me look at it. So I went out and looked at it, and it wasn't that bad. So I said, I'm going to use my saw. And then I looked at his, and it was half the size of mine. I says, I'm going to cut twice as much wood.
Yeah.
You know?
So what length is the bar?
20-inch.
And you just bought a 20-inch bar,
yeah,
right?
I like the 20-inch bar. I've got a saw with up to 28. It's, you know, you got to need it. It's stupid to have a bar that's way too big.
Yeah.
You know.
It's nice. I like the long bar even limbing because you don't have to bend over so far.
Yeah, but if you're carrying a 16-pound saw or something like that, you know, it's...
And that's a 3/8 chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the smaller chain for years, and once I went to that 3/8, you eat through wood.
Yeah, it does. It just goes like crazy.
Yeah, it's got a slightly bigger curve.
Yeah.
Opens it up a little more.
Oh, it makes a big difference, especially after using a small one for years.
And I went to skip chain.
Yep.
And you would think half the teeth, half the cutting, but boy, they cut nice.
There's another skip chain guy.
I'm telling you.
I'm outnumbered here tonight.
You got to do the skip chain. You want? There's no difference. I've never noticed a difference.
I just noticed a difference.
I just never bought one.
Yeah. They're just, it's just, you know, less sharpening, and I would rather not spend more time sharpening than I don't have to.
I'll probably try one eventually, but...
Yeah, I don't even know what the point is. I mean...
No, if it works, why not? You can't even buy them for... Like, I couldn't get one for a 16 or an 18-inch bar that wasn't going to be custom-made, so I upped the bar just to get that, and what a difference.
CFA, all of our... At the Catskill Forest Association, all of our chains are now skip, full skip.
How does that work for bore cutting?
It's great. As long as you know.
No problem.
As long as you sharpen it properly.
Well, that goes with any chain.
Yeah. Today I bore cut and it worked really good.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing about the saw is the gas. Got to use the high test ethanol-free gas.
Yeah.
What a difference that makes.
Do you know why? I mean, we were talking about this before.
Yeah,
Bob.
It sounds like the same conversation we had about an hour ago.
Yeah, Bob did a study on that from Ashokan Turf and Timber, but there's a reason, I guess.
It just, to me, it works.
Yeah, Bob says it emits water, I guess, in the can. Ethanol gas.
Well, I know it screws up carburetors really bad.
Yeah.
I have not found any water in my gas cans since that 5 years ago when I made the switch and drew a line and said, that's it.
Right.
All my small equipment gets non-ethanol.
Yeah.
And
you got Stewart's right close, too. That helps.
Yeah. But there's a few places around where we can get it. You know, Tedda's. One of them that I just discovered this summer. So.
But you can hear a difference in the saw when you use that ethanol-free. You run regular ethanol gas and switch, and you can feel and hear a difference.
I can't hear the difference in it because I've never run ethanol gas in my saws.
It's been so long, I wouldn't know. Yeah,
for me too. But I do remember when I switched. It's like when I put radial tires on my first car and says, "Sheepers, I'm going 80."
I think you get a lot more power out of it too.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The chainsaw that I used to use with ethanol is dead. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's your sign.
Yeah. However, that 365, I think, just may have bit it too. But the 365.
Oh, what a shame.
We'll see. I haven't gotten it back yet from but.
Well, at least it didn't call you up and say, sorry, pal.
Well, I got two. I like to have two medium saws just in case, you know.
Gotta have two. So, Mike, what do you use for backup?
Right now, I don't have one.
Wow. Working without a net.
Yeah, well, my wife's got a 435 Husky, and that's gotten me out of a little trouble.
So when you get pinched, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Or I take my tractor in and lift the log up till my saw comes out.
Yeah, right.
A little tough when you're halfway up the mountain. But...
Yeah, well, I don't have any place I really can't get to that I cut. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight we're having a firewood roundtable discussion with Mike Porter and Tom Lindvite. So this is probably pretty important, is storing and stacking and drying firewood, right?
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, it's got to be covered somehow. And it's got to have air. And those two things seem to be counterintuitive, but if they don't get airflow, it never dries. Yeah. It just turns moldy and, you got a mess, and it's always wet.
I've had trouble with mold, big time. In fact, this last wood, the wood I'm burning now, I stacked it in the woods, put it on pallets, so it's off the ground. I used pallets as the end boards, and I stacked it right up tight to the end boards. And then my wife bought new tarps and custom cut them to fit the top of the pile so that it was air circulation possibility.
Yeah, that's what you want, is the top of the pile.
Yeah, and when we brought it home, she said, it didn't work. There's water in there. And anywhere that was a low spot, it went through the tarp. So the plastic tarps don't work.
I hate tarps.
You've got a good source of metal, though, so you keep your...
No, I can't use metal.
You can't use... blow away?
They blow away. Oh. I've done everything I can with tying those things down.
I'm gonna put a layer of wood on top.
Doesn't work. No. I used to put pallets on top.
Oh.
I get a lot of wind.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we talked about this on the last time we discussed radio, firewood.
You came up with the carpets.
I came up with the carpets. I saw a person doing that, and carpets are the best.
Hmm.
It doesn't soak through?
No.
Water?
No, because it takes, by the time it does, most rains have already stopped.
Yeah.
And it is kind of waterproof in the bottom of a carpet.
Hmm. I'd never heard that before.
I may try that on my shop pile.
And it molds to your top of your pile.
Yeah, that's true. It would.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, the snow would hold it down, that's for sure.
It's the best thing. I mean, I get so much wind, and then my wife is like, you should build a firewood
shed.
My neighbor's shed blew over one day.
Oh.
We get wind. We get wind coming off of Mumbakas Mountain, and it comes down, and nothing stops it.
I know your neighborhood. It's driving through there this time of year. If the snow is powdery, you could have a plow out there all day long sometimes.
It just
blows right across.
And the tin was bad because where my firewood is in front of the house, and now you have shrapnel coming at the vehicles.
Yeah.
To where it's bad. Yeah. You know, it's like, all right, you know, this is actually...
That's only got to happen once.
Yeah, and knock out a window, and now it's like, holy cow.
Well, the big thing, the reason I'm doing my wood the way I am now, I've got it blocked in the woods until spring. I'm not going to cover it in the woods. I'm going to let it dry over the winter in the rounds, split it, and put it in my woodshed at home when I burn the wood out.
Do you do that? I do it with rounds. I pre-dry with rounds. Do you do that?
No.
I think it works.
It's better than leaving it in log length.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once I start cutting it, you know, I just want to get it cut, splitting on the stack, and out of the way so I got room to cut more.
Yeah, my rounds, I don't even put off the ground. I just stack them as rounds. That's 3 years from now, wood.
Oh, okay. I'm doing mine for this next year.
Then it'll get split, and that fills for 2 years. But it works. It seems to work. I think you get a little drying.
I'm sure you get a little bit. I don't know how much you get, but...
Well, I
mean...
Checks,
so if it's checking, it's drying a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you cut up a saw log, it's starting to dry at the end.
As a sawyer, you know that when you have logs, if you don't seal the end of the logs, you know, they end check. But when you make boards out of them and you go in 6 inches, it's still the same moisture content.
Yeah, doesn't lose a lot of moisture.
Not
even
6 inches.
But it's 6 inches from each side.
If you're doing a 2-foot-long block...
Yeah.
Then you've got 6 or a foot of dryness.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. Gets it all ready and prepared.
I just find dry is the most important thing. I have two different piles, one at the shop, and that's a cinder block, you know, cement block building, and my firewood pile's on the north side, which isn't great, and I have a high, I guess the peak is probably... 12, 14 feet off the ground, and I nailed up a piece of plastic, and it comes down at a long angle. So it's like a wind tunnel going through, and the air can go through. And any rain that comes down, it's not that the plastic keeps it off, it just sheds it off.
Yeah.
It never gets a chance to sit, so it rolls off. That one doesn't dry as good as the one for my house, which is underneath my enclosed porch. You know, the porch sits up on stilts, so underneath is completely open. The wind comes through, and I can get 5 cords in there tight.
Yeah.
Wow.
And if I get them put up fast enough, you know, early enough, by November, I'm good to go because it gets no rain on it at all.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't have to keep re-evaporating.
Right.
And every time the wind blows, I smile.
Yeah, I feel like the best would be like a, what do you call it? Not a, not necessarily a shed, but a, like a pavilion.
On just like a pavilion would be my ideal.
Yeah.
With maybe just some poles in it to keep your pole barn stable.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I've got, I'm in the village, so I'm a little short for space. I have a sap house in the backyard. I have my woodshed. I used to put some of my sapwood in the woodshed, but then I decided I needed more room for house wood, so my sapwood sits out. But when I built my woodshed, it's 2 bays, 10 feet wide and 8 feet deep. And I put a pallet floor in. Every once in a while, somebody's there helping me, and they'll fall through a pallet.
But
you replace them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the sides are built with overlapping boards so that the air can always go through. And I've put stuff in this past year. I haven't started burning it yet, but it's dry like the other stuff. And if I have trouble, I've got one of those big orange floor fans, you know, that you see in stores where they're washing the floor. I can put that in there. Keep the neighborhood up.
Yeah, just hanging from the ceiling.
Just put it in there and let the air circulate if you feel like you're having trouble. And it does make a lot of noise, so the neighbors don't like it. But I don't use it. I tell them where the plug is. If you don't like it, unplug it.
Airflow is everything.
Yeah.
Some people are real sticklers on how neat it is. Yeah. What do you think?
I like stable.
Stable?
Stable.
What quantifies stable?
Stable means my grandchildren can't get hurt.
Yeah.
They know the rule is don't play near the woodpile, but you want to make sure nobody can get hurt, because if you've ever had one come over, whether you're there or not at the time, it's number one, it's a mess. Number two, it could put a hurting on a person. Big
it's a
time.
Lot of, it's a lot of weight.
Yeah. It's tons.
Yeah. I had one of the sides of my, I have the 2 bays, and one side, for some reason, no matter how careful I am, it bows out in the middle, and I have to push it back. And I just take my Go Devil and drive the wood back in. But no one else gets firewood but me. So
that guy at Margaville Mountain is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah, his, he wins the award.
Yeah, he does.
It's pretty square. It's like level square.
Yeah, I think he really, really worked at that.
He's got it down. Some of these guys, I'm like, man, that guy. Yeah. Well, how does he do that?
Yeah, there's some. There's I think it's out on 212. I don't know if they're doing it this year, but there's a guy that does beehive piles.
Yeah.
Out on 212 around Centerville area.
Huh.
That does a really nice job.
You think that works as well as rectangle?
You know, some swear by it. There's a book out called Norwegian Wood that was written by a Norwegian wood.
So, yeah.
That's a pretty good book,
it is,
you know.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah.
And
there's a lot of possibilities.
He talks about all those. And I have a friend that lives on Zena Road. He burns a lot of wood. He's entirely wood heat. Last time I talked to him, and he was making those beehive piles too.
Because it supposedly sheds heat somehow, or
water.
Air
sheds water.
And water, but I don't know, man.
It says it works for him, but then he does a two-year rotation. You know, he'll leave those beehive piles up for 2 years before he finally gets to burning those. By then, he's made more. And
I guess you'd have to compare it to some of the, I mean, I do rectangle and get 2-3 years ahead, and I don't know.
I wish I could get a half a season ahead.
Well, just get 2-3 years 1 year, and then you're then, yeah. You know?
That's, what are we talking about? 3 years, 30 quarts.
You burn how
I
many?
I burn 10 quart a year.
Ooh. How many? So
five
I guess now we're going to get
five
into.
Five in a house.
Oh, you're eating a shop, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could, I don't know, it could be done.
That's a lot of.
Just got to bite the bullet 1 year.
Work 1 year.
Just gotta, and then just replace after that. I feel like if you can get ahead of it, it's probably one of the best things.
That would be like money in the bank for me, you know. But
yeah, because then you just cut what you replace.
Yeah, well, it's still going to be 10 quart a year.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's really more like 8.5 or 9, but you get a bad winter, and there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know how many cord I burn. I've never done the math. My piles are 10 feet wide. As high as I can reach, which is about 7.5 feet high, 4 deep, and
it's
24 inches.
Just got to multiply the three,
yeah,
and
simple
I got to do. Like I said, I got to do the math.
Divide by 128. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's discussion is Firewood Roundtable Discussion with Mike Porter and Tom Linvite. When we get back, we'll talk more about firewood.
And so it was.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we're talking about our firewood roundtable discussion with Mike Porter, president of the Catskill Forest Association, and Tom Lindveit. So, buying firewood. We're just talking about it off the air. What do you think people should know about buying firewood?
Well, it's funny because when we brought the subject up, what's the next subject? Mike said, what's buying firewood?
Yeah, what's buying firewood?
Because a lot of us, you know, if you really, I think if you want to save money heating with wood, which is why a lot of people do it, if you buy your firewood, you're really not, we just had a mini debate about this. You're really not saving a lot of money, but you might save a little. And you know, if you invest in other things like energy efficient windows and better insulation and more efficient heating systems in the house, all that stuff pays off. But I think, you know, when you guys talked about the benefits of burning wood last week, you went through, you know, the forestry management stuff, the exercise, the good, you know, clean, dry heat, all of those things. You know, saving money is in there too, but it's only if you put the labor in, and really you're spending it in labor rather than cash.
Well, that's what firewood's about, is saving it through your own labor. But it's definitely a savings. It depends what the price of fuel oil is. So when fuel oil was really down in 2016 or 17,
it was hardly worth it.
It was hardly worth it.
Yeah, and that's about the time I faded out of. I wasn't burning that deliberately, you know. It was those really, the below zero week in January that we got hit with, that time to fire up the wood stove. And,
you know, when you buy firewood, you can buy it log length, or you can buy it cut, split, and delivered. If it's cut, split, and delivered green, you still have to age it.
Yeah.
If it's log length, you got to do everything. You got to cut, split, stack.
The only thing you don't have to do is drop the trees and skid them.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so you are saving that. And a lot of people don't. When I lived in a, suburban environment, I lived in suburbia for a short while, and there's no place to go cut trees, you know.
Yeah.
And sure, on my little lot, I mean, so, yeah, I'd come upstate, buy a load of logs, bring them down there, drop them in my driveway. Everybody in my little suburban neighborhood looked at me like I was some kind of a nutcase. And I'm out there with a chainsaw cutting and splitting.
The thing about firewood is there's so many factors. Like, if you're going to factor in you going up to upstate and, you know, bringing back with and the depreciation on your truck, that's another factor.
Oh, it made absolutely no sense whatsoever. So, let's put that right up front.
But
here I am in my 20s, brand new homeowner, finally got my own wood stove.
Right.
You know, everything's ready to go. I got a new baby in the house. I want my house warm.
Yeah.
And by golly, I cut wood since I was, you know, 12 years old, always for other people. But now I'm going to finally cut some for myself.
But then there's so many other factors as well. Okay, so let's get off the wood for a second. Okay, what's your wood stove? What's your insulation like? I mean, what is your house shaped like? Because I remember University of New Hampshire used to say, really a wood stove is a space heater. And I don't totally disagree with that.
No, you can't. Not from an engineering standpoint.
Yeah, it's not like a furnace or something like that, unless you have a air blower or forced hot air or a boiler, which is totally different. So then is it plate steel? Is it cast iron? I don't know what everyone's using.
Yeah, our house with the doors open is a big loop.
You're a lucky man.
And as the kids were growing up, it was a blast because they just did loops. They ran all the time. And our wood stove is set up in the kitchen, small dining room. And it takes 2 foot wood. It's a box stove, old one, cast iron. And that heats the downstairs.
Yeah.
And I have a fan behind it that blows air 24/7. The only time the fan goes off is when my wife and I are sitting at the table and someone else is there and she wants to talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
She shuts that fan off, and then the rest of the house gets cold. But it's well designed for a wood stove.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I'm sitting on the floor, you can feel the cold air rushing along the floor and the hot air moving above, and it creates its own little circular thing, but that takes time to get going.
It does, and you got to maintain it.
Right. Keep it going. Yeah, it's like I don't know if we talked about this in the last time, but again, there's so many factors with wood. I mean, they say wood is dirty. It's like, well, how do you burn it? Are you damping down too soon? You're basically trying to time, in my head, the peak, right? It heats up, it peaks out, it goes down, and when you do that and how you do that, to me, is the efficiency of wood burning.
And that's keeping the temperature level, and in our house. On these below 0 days, you're fighting a losing battle because of the exposure of the house. So I put in, instead of 2 sticks at a time, I put in 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I keep the draft open all the time, the same distance. I never change it during the course of a day.
You don't change the draft?
Not during the day. I open it about half an inch. All day long, I leave it that way.
Even when you load it?
Yep.
So you have a different wood stove.
Yeah.
Mine is gradually you're going to take down. But see, the thing is, on the older wood stoves, there's the draft on the damper on the pipe, maybe.
No, there's nothing on
that. So you just have the air.
Just the air that comes in through the door.
Yeah, see, a lot of the newer ones do both simultaneously. They do the draft and the air.
Oh, yeah. Mine's 40 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the old style. It's not catalytic. It's just an old Irish box stove. Has a baffle in it that circulates the air. It burns from the back or the front to the back. It circulates up through a plenum and then up the smokestack.
Yeah.
And it really, really heats well. And you've been there. You know what it's like. It feels really good when it's going.
Yeah.
It's got a huge side exposure. It works. It just works good.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'll do if I have to replace it, because I can't find a stove that shape. It's kind of custom built to fit that size.
Well, why can't you get a different flue size?
Well, I could.
Yeah.
I could go to an 8-inch flue, but to get a stove that fits my location and everything.
Yeah.
That's a hard part.
Yeah. So yours is 8 inches?
No, it's 6. But we have an 8-inch thimble.
Yeah.
So I could open it up, take this 6-inch thimble inside of it.
Yeah.
I could take the 6-inch thimble out and make it a bigger flue. Mm. But I don't know. I've got this down to where it works.
Yeah.
At night, I stoke it. I close the draft right off. I shut it right off at night. Mm. And that lasts. It's produces heat. Like last night, it didn't turn, let the furnace come on, because it stayed warm enough in the downstairs that the furnace didn't kick on.
Yeah, I always leave a little air, just because I want it to burn. If I get it just perfect on the so mine has baffles on the top, mm-hmm. and what it does is it closes off the rod when you push it in, closes off the air and the damper simultaneously. Oh, okay. And see, on Vermont castings, it's separate. You have to do the air on one side. The damper either is closed or open mm-hmm. on the Vermont castings we used to have. This one does simultaneously. I want it full out until those gases get at a certain temperature. And then if you damp down stages and you get it just perfect, the baffles, you'll see this carpet of flame at the top that's just burning all the unburned gases. And it is efficient, man. Yeah.
I've noticed with mine this year, this has been almost the best burning year I've had in terms of the wood. When I open my door up and it's been damp, like in the past I've had damp wood, the door is black.
Yeah.
Now it's gray. It's not even, it never gets black, even if I close it down overnight.
I notice the colder the weather is, the more efficient wood stoves are, I feel like, because it drafts better.
I think they draw better, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about, as a fireman, about chimney sizes and insulated versus uninsulated, brick versus, what is it, clay? What is that called?
Tile.
Tile. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think about all that? I mean, you've probably had a lot of experience with seeing people's maybe houses burned down, and what do you think?
I think the outside chimney, no matter what kind it is the least efficient because it cools down quicker. We have an outside chimney. It does creosote up in the top. I have to get it cleaned once a year. But it remains working fine. They get good and hot. The stovepipe very rarely creosotes up bad, but it creosotes a little farther up the chimney. The insulated chimney is going to be better because it's going to stay warmer longer.
Yeah.
And it's even better when it's an interior chimney because it becomes a heat mass that heats the whole house. And we don't have that luxury. We put in a wood stove retrofitted.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to keep your fire going as hot as you can so you don't create creosote and stuff.
Yeah. I have the same stove upstairs and down, and one is an exterior chimney and one is inside. And the one inside is completely more efficient.
Yeah.
You know, because hot goes to cold. So yeah. The one outside, the one downstairs that's exterior, it's just losing more heat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, it's the luck of the draw if you can get a chimney inside.
Yeah.
We could have built our chimney inside, but it would have taken away space. It would have taken away the upstairs. Would have heated better.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to do all the hard work for that. We put a thimble through the wall.
I mean, double insulated, they're expensive, though.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
I spent more money on my pipes than my stoves.
Yeah, there were. We haven't had chimney fires in a while.
Yeah.
With the fire department, things are getting much more well managed, and building codes have made a huge difference. And the fact that people that have wood stoves are learning how to use them.
Yeah.
And how to.
Well, there's a curve.
Yeah.
There's definitely a curve.
Yeah. We used to have 10 or 12 chimney fires a year, and we had one this year. Worst problem this year, I guess I don't want to badmouth anybody, but we've had two houses burned down where one is for sure, the other one's suspected, that the person put their ashes out of their wood stove in a cardboard box and put it on the porch.
Yeah, that's routine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Two houses. One of them, it was a guy there working, and he decided he'd clean the wood stove out for the fireplace out for the people he was working for, put it on the porch.
Oh, my God.
House is gone.
Yeah.
Probably didn't know how long that stove had been out, but there had to be warmth in there when he cleaned it.
Yeah, and ashes, when they're in a stove, you dig down in those ashes, it's warm for days. There's embers, and if you put it in a burnable box or plastic or paper bag.
Especially if it's shagbark hickory.
Yeah.
If it's ash, it'll be out by then.
Here we go again.
You know?
No, really, that ash in that bucket is oxygen deprived, and those embers will just sit there.
Yeah.
You go out there and tap that bucket a couple of times, and you'll see these little puffs of smoke coming up.
Yeah, feel the side of the bucket. The bottom of my bucket the other day, I had it out for 2 days. I felt the bottom. I took out a lot of coals when I did it that day, and it was still warm to the touch.
See, now that shows me that if you have a very efficient stove, though, you shouldn't have that many coals. If you're taking out coals all the time, there's two ways to see if your stove is...
He was probably trying to get the stove cleaned out. I'm not defending you. I'm just taking a guess here because it happens to me all the time.
I got to be a little controversial. It's a round table. So, but if there's smoke coming out and there's a lot of coals, it's not burning efficiently. It should be ash.
See, I clean mine out on the fly. So
mine's never out.
I don't let the fire burn out. I do is I have the house stove is what I think something like yours, got a glass front, big door. So I bank the whole fire over to the one side or the other. Everything that's on the other side, let's say I bank the fire on the left, so all the coals that are on the right, I let them burn out all during the day when I'm running that little maintenance fire just to keep the house nice. And then around 6 o'clock in the evening when I'm ready to fill that stove, I'll shovel all the coals out on the right side, or the ash.
But your fire doesn't ever go out?
No.
Why?
I start it in November, and it goes out in April.
That's crazy.
No, that's heat.
No way. Heat. No way. If it's getting up in the 50s, there is no reason that it shouldn't go out.
I just let it idle down.
So this is the other thing I think people do.
I do those small maintenance fires.
I know, but you got to be starting fires. That, I mean, I let it go out. I go by the temperature, get a smaller fire that's hot, and then let it go out. Because otherwise,
I mean, yeah, if we hit those 55-degree days you get in March sometimes,
yeah,
I'll let it go down for a week. That's great because it's the end of the season. I say what?
It's like the eternal fire from November to January.
I'm not
going to
say, oh, it's 47 degrees outside. It's time to shut the stove off. You know,
I've had
the
rule
says.
Oh, I start fires all the time. It depends on what the weather is like and what the temperature is in the house. Otherwise, you got to damp it down, right?
Yeah, well,
in order to keep it going, you must be damping down.
The stove in my shop is the shop heat. You know, I don't. I have an oil burner, hot air furnace out there. I choose not to use it unless I really have to, and I only use it when it's 5 or 10 below. I run it for 15 minutes in the morning. It gets the building up to temperature. By that time, the wood stove has got another foothold, and it maintains my working temperature in the shop around 58 or 60 all day long.
Man.
But I don't shut that stove off.
We meet guys like you.
I don't want that building to get cold.
There's nothing. It's okay to start a new fire.
Yeah, it is, but I don't want the building cold. That's just me. You
know? No. I'm saying have a smaller fire that burns out and keeps the house still hot. It burns more efficiently.
Yeah.
Instead of having, I think people just don't want to start a new fire. You know what I'm saying?
It's not that I don't like to. I sure don't like to at 5:30 in the morning. You know, when I get up and the stove went out. For some reason, like I had wood that burned out too quick, or I did something stupid.
No, I never have to do it at night, but we'll have to continue this at some other point.
Yeah.
All right.
This round table just reached the end of its hour.
That's right.
Oh,
take care.
We didn't even
have a good night. And this is From the Forest. I'll see you next week, Wednesday, 6 to 7.
Put your ash in a steel bucket.
Yeah.
All right. Not in the vacuum cleaner.
In the middle of the backyard.
And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of the long-forgotten year. When the wildflowers did bloom in the forest, she touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more.